Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody out there. Welcome to Nation Villains. Tonight's topic is, we're taking the pledge over, guys. Minister Farrakhan, we got this Million Man March speech on here, the pledge. We're going to get into that. Sister Gidges is your host. Sister Gidges, you want to take it away?
Assalamu alaikum, Brother DJ Black Caesar. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, sister. Just a little under of it, trying to get stuff together for you guys and trying to get together for me, so you know how it goes.
Yes, and we have with us tonight our very distinguished guest, and well, not guest, because we don't have guests here. We are family. And we have Brother Minister Abel from Mas Mariama, Chicago, Illinois. Assalamu alaikum, sir. How are you?
Wa alaikum salam, dear sister. I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I am blessed by Allah's grace, and I cannot tell you how honored and thrilled I am to have you on tonight. And we also have our chief executive officer, our founder, our boss on the phone, Brother Rakim Khalik Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sister. How are you?
I am blessed, and you have a special guest with you tonight, so why don't you introduce your guest tonight?
A good friend of my family, she's from Chicago, Illinois. Her name is Sister Attorney Geneva Pinson. She's a criminal lawyer, and I'll let her tell tell you all about herself. Sister Geneva.
Good evening. Good evening. How's everybody?
Good evening, sister. Thank you for joining us tonight. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm fine, thanks. How is everybody?
Everybody's good.
Good.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm just listening in tonight. Yes.
Well, we thank you for joining us. And with you being a criminal attorney, I know you had to probably sidestep some of your busy schedule. So we just appreciate you being here. And we hope
thank
that you're
you.
Not talking to Brother Rakim because he's in trouble.
No.
Gidget, we also have Brother Jamil. We got Brother Jamil on the phone line, Sister Gidget.
Oh, we found him.
Brother Jamil.
And we have one of our veteran ministers, one of our fathers of wisdom, one of our brothers who've been so devoted and he's so loved throughout the nation, Brother Jamil Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam to you, Sister Gidget, and to everyone who's gathered there, DJ Black Caesar, our Sister Pinson from Chicago, the boss man, Brother Rakim, and the great Brother Abel Muhammad from Chicago. It looks like tonight's show is going to really, really be a groundbreaker.
And I pray so. So I want to say to the listening audience, you know, if you have questions or comments, we will allow time for you to ask Brother Minister Jamil or Brother Minister Abel questions. The call-in number is 646-716-5971. But right now we're going to get started because we have a lot to cover and a short time to do it. And we're going to be taking the pledge at 9:45. So we might as well get started now. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. I would like to greet our listening audience with our nation's greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am.
Thank you. Yes.
You got a lot of people in queue right now. Just letting you know, you got a lot of people in queue.
Oh, I know, because they can't wait to hear Brother Minister Abel. Now, I know he doesn't need any introduction. I'm going to let him come on and introduce himself. But I tell you, Brother Abel, when I see you on the webcast on Sunday, you are the fire and the spirit of the day, because nobody speaks with the passion that you speak with, and when you speak, we feel it. You know, we feel where you're coming from. So, sir, if you would, please introduce yourself, or just, you know, you don't have to introduce yourself because everybody knows you, but just tell us a little bit something about Brother Minister Abel that maybe we don't know.
Well, dear sister, it's all praises due to Allah, and I'm very honored to be on the radio or on the internet, however people may be listening, or via telephone, however people are picking this up this evening with yourself, and I'm very, very honored by your invitation, as well as with our brother, the famous DJ Black Caesar, our brother Rakim, and one of my people that I've looked up to in the Nation of Islam for many years, even before coming into it, of course, our Brother Minister Jamil Muhammad. And the one thing I would just like to say as we get started here is, I'm so happy and honored to be able to serve on behalf of our people in helping to bridge unity between what are referred to in this world as two different people, the black man who speaks English and the black man, red man, brown man who speaks Spanish, who are referred to as Latinos. And in particular, we don't even realize the impact that what we're going to be discussing today, the Million Man March and the pledge taken there, we don't realize the impact that had not just in the cities of Chicago and Detroit and L.A. and D.C. here in America, but we really don't realize how that reverberated and affected your brothers in the barrios here in America as well as in Central America, in Mexico, in the Caribbean, into Latin America. And it's just really an honor to be on here with you to hear from everyone and to get rekindled in that fire of that sweet Holy Spirit of that Million Man March, which was, of course, a glimpse of heaven for us all.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, as we're embarking on the 17th anniversary of the Million Man March, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that he was going to postpone the discussion on the economic blueprint, you know, what he initially wanted to speak about. And he's going to push that back to Savior's Day. So I'm going to ask you, Brother Abel, what can we expect to hear from him in Charlotte? And I know it's an election year, and what about this election year that is going to affect black people that the minister wants to really address?
Well, you know, I can't preempt in knowing what he's going to say, but I know that it will be divine guidance in this most critical of hours. I mean, we know as we speak, there's a vice presidential debate on almost probably every channel on television right now. And it should be of great interest to black and Latino and the poor and underprivileged. But usually most of our people don't watch it, because if you've watched any of the debates, they never speak about the poor, the black, and the Latino. They like to talk about the middle class. Well, this sort of imaginary class of people that perceive themselves not as poor as those who recognize themselves as poor. And what I believe the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is going to give to us, the poor and the disadvantaged and those who know that we are not in any position but at the bottom of the society here in America, not because that's what God has made us, but that's because that's what this society has placed us into that category. I know we are going to receive from him that which we need to guide us in this most critical hour. This election is very, very important coming up. We may not be happy with all of the decisions that Brother President Barack Obama has made, but if we listen to the guidance and the wisdom that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has given us, it gives us a better measurement by which we can grade our brother Barack, because even though he is our brother, he's not the black president, he's the president of the United States of America, and we have to be very clear on that, but we also have to understand that he's still our brother, and we have to go back and remember the value that he will have, inshallah, at the end of these 4 years. But I'm just anxious to get to Charlotte in 2 days and hear from the minister on Sunday, because I know whatever Allah blesses him, the fact that he changed the subject after we've been promoting it from the economic program lets us know that he felt it was of vital importance to give this guidance. And, of course, since he works from inspiration and is divinely guided, I'm just anxious to hear what Allah has blessed him with for us in this very, very critical hour.
Yes, sir. And, you know, I brought that up because I had Brother Jamil on the show along with Southwest Regional Representative Minister Robert Muhammad last week, and we kind of talked about the black agenda. And Minister Robert stated that, you know, we really already have an agenda, which is the Muslim program, what the Muslims believe, what the Muslims want, and that it needed to be put in legislative form. And so I'm just thinking that, you know, we're going to be impacted by this election greatly in some form. And I just, like you said, the minister has divine guidance, and he felt that it was critical that he give us a message in this time. So I'm right with you on that, Brother Abel. And I want to know, since the FOI and you know, yourself have been taking it to the streets, what are the people saying when you're out there? What are you hearing from people?
Yes, ma'am, we're blessed to be here. Most of the times, the majority of times that we've gone out into the streets, it's been following our leader and commander-in-chief who's present amongst us, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, into the streets. And
yes,
the blessing of that, and a blessing of that has been that we're walking and knocking on doors and talking to brothers on corners, and they're like, what are you all doing here? They start to ask us basic questions, you know. What they want to know is, what are you all doing here? And we tell them we're there on behalf of Minister Farrakhan to check on them and see how they're doing and see if there's anything we can do that could be of service to maybe help in whatever way we can. And they say, oh, and the next question usually will be, well, where is Minister Farrakhan? And we have the blessing the majority of times of saying, he's actually right on this next block. He's actually coming on this block in just a few moments. And if you could see the looks on these brothers' faces and these sisters' faces when they know that a man like the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the man that brought 2 million men to Washington, D.C., the man who has gone all over the world and been received in nations, the man who has stood up and confronted the U.S. government and its evils, the man who has combated against the Jewish forces and is alive and standing strong, when that man comes into the hood to talk to little brother on the corner, little sister sitting on her doorstep, the elder who's in her home who can't come out, and they just, the hope and the life and the energy that comes into their faces has been an absolute blessing. The balance of that has been to hear the heart-wrenching stories from our brothers and sisters in the streets. As almost every time we have gone out, we go onto a block where somebody has lost a loved one to violence. And there are memorial services, and there are people mourning almost every time we go out. And by the grace of Allah, the presence of the Food of Islam and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is able to give some comfort to them. But there's other things that we have heard that we haven't been able to comfort. Brothers will honestly tell you, when we ask, what can we do to help you, brother? They'll tell you, we need a job. I'm not out here trying to do this. I'm doing what I need to do to pay my bills. I got babies. I got bills. And it's real. And we can't honestly tell them, well, go get a job. We know there are no jobs. So to see the condition of our people hands-on, literally touching them, and hearing from them what it is that we need, I know that the leadership and guidance of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and what he has been asking us to do and what the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad has been asking us to do, which is to unite, is the only solution to our problem. And whenever we have confronted our brothers and sisters, and I use the word confront not in an adversarial way, but when we are not afraid to go and meet them where they are and see them face to face in the real sense of the word, we have received nothing but love and been embraced by them, because we don't lie to them. We don't make up a program or promise them something that we don't have. We tell them that the answer and solution to all of our problems is in our unity. And by the grace of Allah, we know that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is going to be presenting an economic program for self-development and self-construction of our community, or reconstruction of our wasted cities. But we know that that has to be done in a timely manner, and it has to be done effectively and efficiently. But the blessing to me has been to be out in the streets and just see the light in the little baby's eyes when they see black men clean. I have to share this. One of the comments we get more than anything else from friends and neighbors and relatives who have seen us out there, when they call one another and they'll call their family members over and say, you all got to come over here on 59th and Halsted. The brothers are marching. And the response that we get from most of the people is that they've never in their life, they've seen church people look nice going to church, but they've never seen black men that clean and that disciplined in their life. And just just the presence of the FOI. You see the babies, the little boys and the little girls. You've seen the photographs and the final call, but it happens. They come out and they start lighting up. They start putting on clothing. They start putting on a shirt. They start pulling up their pants. We don't tell them, pull up your pants. Our presence brings them a clean glass, and now they start for the first time possibly in their life looking at themselves differently, saying, why are my pants hanging down? Why am I dressed like this? Why am I talking like this? So to see that effect, you know, the media may say, oh, well, the crime rate is still up and this and that. Yeah, that may be true, but if you look at the statistics from the 90s when the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan called us to the Million Man March, the crime rate in Chicago has been way down since 1995. It has been on a steady decrease, and even in the so-called higher impacted time frame that we're living in right now, where they're saying there's murders everywhere, it's still nowhere near where it was in the early and mid-90s prior to the Million Man March. So there's definitely some media manipulation going on that makes it seem possibly that things are worse than they are.
Yes, absolutely. It is exaggerated, especially when it comes down to our community. They will exaggerate the truth, and they fail to even acknowledge any good that we're doing, because I haven't really seen anything about how the minister has been in the streets and how the people have received them outside of the nation. We have to get those reports from within. You know, it's not anything that our media is supporting us on, and of course we don't expect that. So, Brother Jamil, I'm going to ask you, since the minister has shifted his topic, how do you think this election is going to impact us as a people?
Well, sister, let me start my comments by saying, first, how grateful I am and happy I am to hear the power and the passion that you referenced in the voice and words and thoughts of my brother Abel Muhammad from Chicago. As a student minister of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, there is much to be learned and much great example to be followed. But I thank Allah that Brother Abel is doing that with the effect and the energy that he's doing. And it's contagious. I had to put my phone on mute because I was howling over here and running up and down. I was looking for a tambourine to slap because that man was teaching and preaching, and the Spirit of God indwelling in him catches fire because he attempts to follow the example of God's man in our midst. And so I salute you, Brother Abel. I really do, because I heard you tonight, and I'm invigorated and resuscitated by your words, and I thank Allah for you. Now the question, Sister Gidget, of the political election that looms on the horizon, I would refer you to a chapter, and I don't have it in front of me, but there's a chapter in the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's book called The Fall of America, and it's called The National Election. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad takes to task the political parties and their chicanery, their treachery, their deception, and their trickery. For the American public in general, but for black people in particular, politics has been a woefully substandard place for us to put our hopes for the future. Yet black people continue to look at elections as if they will change the condition under which we live without us first changing ourselves. The Holy Quran says that Allah changes not the position or the condition of any people until and unless they first change themselves. Why do we think that whether we are voting for Democrats or Republicans, there will be a significant difference in our communities and in our lives unless we turn to God? Now, I know this sounds ethereal and spooky to many of you, and you may believe that I'm talking God in an hour of politics, and therefore I'm being impractical and impolitic and inopportune. But I would say this to you now, that in this election season, I refer you back to the words of an old song by the Winans. You know the Winans brothers and sisters from Detroit. There's a whole lot of them. They sing gospel music. And in the group, they used to include Marvin and Carvin and, you know, the Winans brothers.
BB and CC and them.
Yeah, BB, CC and them. Pops and Mom's daughters. Yeah, yeah. And they sang a song that said, "It matters not who's president. What matters most is who's resident in you." And that lyric rings true to me tonight. It matters not who's president. What matters most is who's resident in you. Now, of course, it does matter to daily life in America. As Brother Robert, Student Minister Robert of Houston, Texas, pointed out so very, very well last week on your program, Sister Gidget, that politics has been successful in ameliorating some of our conditions. But the trickery is that they ameliorate or improve only enough of our condition to keep us invested in a process and in a system which will never ultimately change us and will always leave us under the foot of our oppressors. So vote wisely, remembering the old axiom that a wise voter or a wise block of voters or a wise community has no permanent friends, no permanent enemies. We just have permanent interests. And the interests of Black America must be served. I agree with Brother Abel 1,000%. No one's talking about the poor. No one's talking about the black. No one's talking about the brown. No one's talking about the issues of racial profiling and of jamming the population of brothers and sisters from across this country into the penal industrial complex, the prison industrial complex, where they're building beds for prisons on the basis that they can guarantee they'll be occupied, and they're guaranteeing that they'll be occupied with our little sons and our little daughters. The hell they will. We'll stand up with Allah and his messenger and minister, Louis Farrakhan, and we're going to make a difference by Allah's determination and by our will. So tonight, Brother Abel has me fired up. I am going to participate with everyone else in the election, and we're going to watch as well as pray, but you better make sure that you're praying before you watch so you know what you're looking at.
Absolutely. Okay. Wow, we got too much firepower on the phone tonight. We're going to need a fire extinguisher up in here. And Brother DJ Caesar had pointed out that we had a lot of callers on the phone, so let's just, you know, I don't want to keep them holding too long. So we're going to take a couple of questions right now. So, Caesar, if anyone has a question now, allow them to ask or make a comment.
602-602, you can make your comment or ask a question. 602-602, you can make a ask a question or comment if you want. Okay, let me cut that back off. And that's it. That's all we got right now, Sister Gidget.
Okay. All right. So we're going to go into the list of benign ministries that I feel, me personally, as I was researching this topic, that's something that we need to implement. You know, I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, we took a pledge, even though it was the Million Man March. Yes, I was there in full effect. And you know, when the brothers took the pledge, and they came back to their cities, there were numerous of businesses, organizations that were born out of the spirit of the Million Man March that would not be in existence today had it not been for Minister Farrakhan calling 1 million plus men to Washington, D.C. However, I think at some point, you know, we forgot, and that's why I said we need to retake the pledge tonight. But before we get into that, I want Brother Abel to talk about atonement, because this is what it was really about. You know, the Million Memoirs had a tremendous impact on people. It made you think about a lot of things. But I think what we have forgotten the most is the atonement process. And so when I was speaking to Brother Abel this afternoon, I told him, I said, you know, you better than I can speak on this subject. So I want Brother Abel, if you would, to take us through the atonement process.
Yes, ma'am. Well, you know, it's important to remember that these eight steps, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was divinely inspired and guided to share them with us, and we thank Allah for blessing us with this through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and those who were around him who helped to develop the idea, who helped that he heard it from originally a Christian pastor, the idea of atonement, and it struck a chord with him, and he was the right man at the right time with the right message, and it just reverberated, and what we came from that was what we now know and goes down in history as the Million Man March. These eight steps of atonement, I'm going to list them for us very, not too quickly, because I want to just take a moment and give the description that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan gave to us for each step as he presented them to us on that mall, October 16th, 1995, and the beautiful spirit that we had on that day in the mall. That I know Brother Jamil, who I saw there that day, I was not yet even a member of the Nation of Islam, but I was there in Washington, D.C., and I can attest to the beauty of that day, which is really unmatched and unparalleled in any day that I've ever experienced. The only thing that I can compare it to is the day that my children have been born, and the day that I married my wife, the day that I joined the Nation of Islam. These kind of momentous dates in my personal life are the only type that even I can even honestly come too close to comparing it to what it felt like on that day on the mall in Washington, D.C. But it's important because these steps lead us to exactly what you're talking about, dear sister. If we're talking about an economy for a nation, nine ministries of a nation, the building of a nation, that's what the name of the show is, right? Nation building?
That's the name of our group, yes, sir.
Well, that can't happen without this atonement process. And the very first step in atonement is to first point out the wrong. The minister said that the first stage is the most difficult of all because when we are wrong and we are not aware of it, someone has to point out the wrong. I want, and this is a quote directly from the speech that the minister made that day on the mall. He said, I want to say this again, but I want to say it slowly, and I really want each of you, each one of these points to sink in. How many of us in this audience at some time or another have been wrong? Would we just raise our hands? We can do that today here on the airwaves as well. Okay, now, when we are wrong, Lord knows we want to be right. The most difficult thing is when somebody points it out. Do we accept it? Do we reject it? Do we hate the person who pointed out our wrong? How do we treat the person who points out our wrong? Now, I want you to follow me. When you go to a doctor, you're not feeling well. The doctor says, what's wrong? Well, I don't know, doc. Well, where is the pain? Tell me something about the symptoms. You want the doctor to make a correct diagnosis. You don't smack the doctor when he points out the wrong. You don't hate the doctor when he points out what's wrong. You say, thank you, doctor. What's my prescription for healing? Now look, whoever is entrusted with the task of pointing out the wrong, depending on the nature of the circumstances, is not always loved. And that seems to be the problem interpersonally. This is me talking now. We say we want to be right. We say we want to have unity. We know we need unity to do these economic things, to do these nation-building things, to have our own schools, to have our own farms. Yet if there are offenses which don't allow us to unite and somebody points out the offense, we must have a proper orientation on how to accept the pointing out of wrong. We become so thin-skinned in a silly way. Where we think if somebody tells us something that we don't like, that rubs us wrong, that somehow they're our enemy,
when in fact they are really our true friend, because it's only in the pointing out of wrong where we can eventually come through the steps of atonement and have real forgiveness, real reconciliation, and eventually union with one another and grow into perfect union with God. But it all starts with the pointing out the wrong. And we know we live in a society. Yes, sir.
I want to interject something because you're rolling so strong. I've got to bear witness to what you're saying.
Go ahead,
when you're pointing out the wrong, brothers and sisters, there's a way to do that.
Absolutely.
There's a way to point out the wrong. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, one of the most beautiful things about him as an individual and as a follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and a believer in Allah, is that Minister Farrakhan is a civilized man. Many of us hear the words point out the wrong, and we go full guns, buddy. Let me tell you something, you're wrong. You're just wrong. Let me tell you what's wrong with you. Let me tell you what I see is wrong with you. And we start reading the riot act about what's wrong with a person, and the personhood of that individual is under assault, and they cannot hear what is really wrong with their actions because they think we're telling them that something's wrong with them as a person.
Come on.
What I would challenge us to do is to challenge the wrong. You're pointing out the wrong, not the person, as if he or she is wrong. Remember, your mind was created to think right. By nature and birth, you are the people of God. God himself told you and me that we should work cheerfully and fear not. Then he told us why. He said, you are the best, the righteous, and the powerful. So if you are involved in wrong or guilty of wrong, just hear the person out, and when you're speaking wrong to someone else, tell them, dear brother, I love you so much. I don't want wrong to destroy or mar the beauty of your character in the midst of this assembly. So let's get rid of the wrong to protect you, my beautiful brother, because we don't want nothing to happen to you. There's a way you point out wrong. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
That was so smooth, Brother Jamil.
All
you almost make
Allah.
Somebody want
to
be wrong.
That wasn't the idea. We better go back to Brother Abel. Go ahead, brother.
Yes, sir. But it's a beautiful point, Brother Jamil, because the objective has to be that this is done out of love, that this is done out of caring, that it's done with the motive of us trying to reconcile. So that has to be the spirit of everything. The second step is to acknowledge the wrong. In this context, the word acknowledge means to the truth of the fact that we have been wrong. That means somebody's pointing out something to us that we're not aware of. We don't recognize it. It's not one of our own faults that we've found in our own self-analyzation, or it's not something that we necessarily can perceive about ourselves. So we now have to trust the person and acknowledge and accept what they're telling us about us, acknowledging that, yeah, I'm not perfect. Maybe I didn't know that I was offending you in this way. I didn't even know that I was doing this, as we so many times have. What do they call it in the world, an honest mistake? We can live with that, but sometimes there are things that we do which are vices, which we know we have to work on, and there are sometimes these character traits that we've developed in our life that we may not be so aware of. And it takes, as Brother Jamil beautifully pointed out, the real right spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood, where we're not doing it for show, we're not trying to do it to call somebody out, but out of real love, we pull somebody to the side, and you know, brother, you said this, and it really bothered me, or you did this, sister, and it really, really offended me. And then we, as the person receiving that critique out of love, have to be able to respond with the right spirit, which gets us to point number three. To confess our faults. First, you confess the fault to Allah and then to the person or persons whom your fault has ill affected. Well, in order to confess, that means we've acknowledged, we've accepted, because somebody has pointed out what's wrong. Now we're accepting, we're taking responsibility, if you will, for it, and now we're apologizing. We're saying to God, we're confessing it, saying, Lord, And we already know he's the ever off forgiving. Forgiving and returning to mercy. And so what we do is we apologize to him. Once we're straight with God, really everything else will kind of fall into line. But we still now have to return to the person who pointed out the fault to us. Return to the person who we've offended, and now we have to make amends with them. And that's going to, again, increase the amount of communication, increase the affinity between us, because we are now acknowledging, yeah, I know I did something wrong, and it produces a certain type of spirit in us when we acknowledge it, when we accept it, and then when we confess it and say, I'm sorry. We may at first encounter, as we often do, a little bit of anger or bitterness because the person may not be in the right or best mood to accept our confession at that time, but because we are the righteous, because we are made to think right, because we are naturally inclined to do what is right, it'll only be a matter of time now that since we're doing the right steps, since we're doing the right process and in the right spirit, it will only be a matter of time now before we get the right results from it. So we shouldn't let that impede our process, because things don't go always as smoothly as we think they should go in our mind. Which brings us to step number 4, which is repentance. It means feeling contrition or self-reproach for what one has done or failed to do. So repentance has to do with our posture, our spirit, our feeling, and the way that we now have accepted the responsibility of our own action or inaction, which has caused some harm or caused some sort of difficulty or hurt to someone we love, someone around us, a brother, a sister, a parent, a child even. This is not limited to just in the mosque. The 8 steps of atonement are absolutely keys to every level of relationship, interpersonal relationship between us and our coworkers, us and our workers in the mosque, us and the other laborers in the mosque, us and our wife, us and our children. These principles are universal and must be universally applied, and they will be universally applied the more familiar we become with them. And the worse that the circumstances in the world become, this will become a guiding sort of standard for us so that we can repair many of the issues we have in all of those aforementioned categories, whether it be work or politics or whatever. Everywhere we go, there are damaged relationships, and the steps of atonement are the keys we have to heal those relationships. After repentance, we come to step number 5, which is atonement itself. Atonement means we must be willing to do something in expiation of our sins. So now atonement means we feel bad, we've acknowledged it, we've confessed it, now we actually have to do something. We must bring that into activity. We can't just say, oh, I know what I did was wrong. The person we offended now must be able to see in our actions, in our motives, and in what we're doing now from this point forward, that there's absolutely a change and something has happened, that we are now trying to do something to make up, if you will, to pay for, not just to acknowledge in word, not just to acknowledge in our posture, but to actually acknowledge in our life and in our actions that, yes, I admit that what, or I acknowledge and I confess that what I did is wrong. I repent to you in word, but I also now atone to you in action by trying to do something for you to show you how contrite I was, to show you how sorry I am for what I did that caused this whole situation to begin with. Step number 6 is forgiveness. It means to cease to feel offense and resentment against another for the harm done by an offender. It means to wipe the slate clean. Now, that forgiveness is very important. It doesn't mean to just forgive in word and say, all right, I accept your apology. Step number 6 is critical, because what we have to do is forgiveness means to grant pardon for a remission of an offense, sin. It is to absolve, to clear, to exonerate and to liberate, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, because sin has an enslaving effect on us. And when we offend one another by some act or inaction that we have or have not done, then there is a weight or a burden that comes from that. And in the forgiveness of that, there is a lifting of that weight from off of us. So when you've pointed out something to somebody, they acknowledge it, they confess it, they repent, they atone, we're sort of duty-bound now to, of course, forgive them. Otherwise, why point it out to begin with if you're not going to forgive them once they've become contrite, once they've tried to do something in expiation of their fault? So we want to make sure that we follow these steps and try to do them as close to the order as possible. Sometimes if we're blessed enough, maybe we don't have to wait for somebody to point out the wrong, because sometimes we just know we were foul and did something wrong to begin with. But if it hasn't been done, then let's start with point number one, where somebody points out the wrong. We acknowledge the wrong, confess the fault, repent, atone, forgive, which brings us to steps number seven, reconciliation and restoration. It means to resolve differences and to establish or reestablish a close relationship between previously divided persons. That's the point of this whole thing, isn't it? We pointed out the wrong because, man, I love you. I love you, brother. I love you, sister. And I don't like the way things are anymore. So we need to get this right now. I want us to be tight the way we were. I want us to be cool the way we were. I want us to be close. I want to be able to trust you. I want to be able to rely on you. I want to have that bond with you again. But we can't have this when we have this thing in the way here, this act that was committed that offended me, this thing that you said, this act that you did. So we now, after forgiveness, have to reconcile and restore. And after that, it brings us to the final step, which is number eight, perfect union with God. The result of completing the atonement process is achieving the perfect union with Allah God, who is the best at guiding us to freedom. And that's what this is really about. If what we really want is freedom, real freedom only comes through the steps of atonement, because it is only through the steps of atonement that we can achieve perfect union with God. And once we are united with Him, united with one another in brotherhood and sisterhood, then what is there that can be put before us that we cannot accomplish if we stay on the path and following these processes and steps? And that's why it's so significant that this is what was given to us on the mall on October the 16th, 1995. We didn't go there asking for jobs. We didn't go there asking for money. We didn't go there asking for social reform programs. We didn't go there asking or pointing out the wickedness of this government, which can easily be done. But instead, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan pointed us to ourselves and to God that we can get right and get what we really want, which is true freedom, justice, and equality. And in the steps of atonement, we have the infrastructure which allows us to build our nation, one nation under God, wherein we can be free, justified, and equal with the best in civilized society.
Yes, sir. And Brother Abel, thank you so much for breaking that down to the last common denominator. I've heard him explain, but I have never heard him explain like that. So, brother, thank you so much, because I don't know about everybody else, but I should have told the audience they should have came with their pencils and pads and be ready to really go to class when you were on here, because I was writing the whole time that you were talking. And, you know, in that spirit, Brother Abel, I want to say something to everyone on the panel, my engineer included, the listening audience. And I want to make sure that we cover everyone. And so I wrote it down. And I want to say, fathers who have been absent in your sons and daughters' lives, as long as you have life in you, there's an opportunity to atone. For mothers who have been absent, are not in their son and daughter's lives, please take the opportunity to atone. even if you have not just been the best parent, please take the opportunity to atone. Ex-husbands and ex-wives, please take the opportunity to atone. Whether you have children or not, let's be civil with one another. Let's have that brotherly, sisterly love that we should always have for one another, irregardless to what has taken place in the different levels of our relationship. Husbands and wives, I'm asking that you atone and that you correct your wrongs and that you commit to be better husbands and better wives to one another. I'm asking that brothers atone to sisters that they have wronged. I'm asking sisters to atone to brothers that they have wronged. I'm asking you to teach your children the process of atonement. And I'm asking all of us to atone to Allah. And so I want you to keep in mind that, you know, forgiveness is a decision. It's not an emotion. You live freer. You live lighter. You live longer, not holding on to any animosities, holding grudges. It's a waste of time, and it creates disunity, and we are in a time now where our unity is vital. So we're going to see if we have any questions before we move on, Brother Abel. So DJ Black Caesar, do we have any questions?
Yeah.
850. You can ask your question, make a comment. 850, you can make your
850, right here. How you doing? Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam, sir. Who we have on the line?
This is Brother Jerome X. Cook. I just got off work.
Oh. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Jerome. It's been a long time. How are you?
I'm just fine. I'm out here in Tallahassee. And I you know, since being new here, and it's a study group here, I've run into a few final call issues, okay? I don't really, I'm learning the streets out here. I'm learning the, you know, it's a school town. And I had a few run-ins with a final call where Brother Abel could probably help me out with this issue. I don't know how to speak Hispanic. I don't know the dialect. I never went to school for it, but when individuals have been interested in it, I don't know how to translate. I can't show inside the paper where I can go to that give a familiar picture to them, you know, to keep that interest about the paper. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Yes, sir. I think so. Well, you know, brother, I would tell you this. You know, though we have been encouraged and instructed by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to learn the other languages, and while you're working on picking up the other languages, which will take a little bit of time, but not too long, believe it or not, it'll pick up pretty quickly. I've seen the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan convert people who don't speak any English. Because it's not what you say from your mouth or what they read in a book that's going to make them into believers. Yes. Of course, Allah will choose who will believe and who won't. But your example, when we went into the streets here in Southeast Chicago, which is the oldest Mexican community here in Chicago, where the people came up in 1910, escaping the Mexican Revolution, and settled here in these parts of Southeast Chicago, past Commercial Avenue, east of Masamariam, we went knocking door to door there, and the majority of people didn't speak any English, but some of them just came out because they wanted to shake the brothers' hands.
Yes.
They wanted to touch them. I've seen people who have been around the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and they speak very, very, very little, if any, English, can't read it at all. Yet they have decided to change and transform their life based off of just what they observe of him. His way is the way that wins them. And if you show them, and sometimes you may be able by showing them some English, showing them some things that you know, let them see the paper. Even if they don't see themselves in it, they've never seen black people presented in the light that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad present them. They've never seen somebody like you who greets them with genuine love, even though there may be a barrier in the physical verbal language that you speak. We're good at perceiving one another's true intent when we run into one another. We can see if there's genuineness there or not. And if you just learn a phrase here or there, go online. There's a great website where you can learn some quick Spanish called livemocha.com. LiveMocha.com. It's free. I think if you pay a small subscription fee, it's got some great information, some real basic things on there. We will make some things available, inshallah, via the Final Call website as well. There were some things there in Spanish. We have some things that I can put in your hand if you'd like to give it to those people specifically. But don't let that be something that deters you. Don't decide, I'm not going to approach them because they don't speak the language. No, you're speaking the universal language, which is the language of obedience to God.
Yes, sir. I just know that I can probably, I'm glad you gave me that. So now I can probably come up with, like you say, small dialect, small words that would, allow me to know that it got across. Every time this happens out here, I just give them the paper. You know,
yes,
my brother
and
gives them the paper.
If you email me, brother, go ahead.
I want you to email Brother Abel, no doubt. But I'd like to ask, Brother Abel, you're a witness to this because you know, you probably know what I'm about to say. I'm one of these people who struggles in that middle ground between Spanish and English, and I got broken English and broken Spanish. Brother Abel and I have been on call out together, and I don't care what. I'm going to speak what I got to speak because, as Brother Abel said, Brother Jerome, and speaking of you, Brother Jerome, you are still there, right?
Yes, sir.
Rome in the house.
But when you speak that language, brother, it comes to you from the heart. Minister Farrakhan's way is what you heard Brother Abel say. He converts people who don't speak a word of English. The minister once took a trip to Uganda, which is in the eastern part of Africa.
Right.
And he spoke to an audience not in Kampala, which is the main city, not anywhere near Entebbe, which is the aviation port and the lakefront port. No, not anywhere near the big cities. He went way back up in the bush in Uganda to teach Islam to a group of people who spoke their tribal language, and they were so isolated that the minister had to speak through four interpreters.
Wow.
Just to make his message plain. Four interpreters heard him teach the words of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Brother Jerome. And when they finally got to the fourth interpreter speaking to them in the language that they could understand, the message was still intact because you saw them pumping their hands over their head and saying, yes, we bear witness. It's not about the specific semantics. It's not about the specialized syntax. What it's about is the heart content. And what Brother Abel is telling you is exactly true. I went to the Los Angeles County Fair once, and in Los Angeles County has a large Latino population. And I went there selling the Final Call at the county fair. And people asked me, how did you drop 200 papers in one day? I said, brother, because I was selling to everybody. They said, well, you don't speak no Spanish. I said, the heck I don't. Why not?
Come on.
And I spoke to the brothers and sisters, and Brother Abel, don't make fun of my I know you got something to say about me. But it was so difficult, Brother Jerome, because if you just took it on the basis of language, I was at a disadvantage. Because the Latino population on the West Coast is largely Mexican in origin. And some from the Central American countries, El Salvador and Guatemala, you see people from those countries, Costa Rica, some, you know. But in the East Coast, where I spend most of my time, most of the Latino population is Puerto Rican or Boricua. You find most of them are Dominican.
Okay? So when you I got a Caribbean Spanish accent and broken Spanish vocabulary, and I'm speaking to Spanish speakers who are natives from Mexico in Los Angeles about Islam.
Yes,
but guess
right.
what? The papers was flying out the hand because everybody understands a big smile and a pat on the back. Everybody
that's
understands
right.
a warm handshake, and everybody understands
yeah.
the word
right.
La Unidad, the unity
right.
of our people all over the world. Huh? You know, everybody understands, you know, that we talk about the unity of the righteous people of the earth against evil. That's what we talk about. It ain't about black or brown. It's about righteousness
right.
standing up against evil and wickedness, and people
right.
will respond. Okay? And Brother Jerome, I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to hear from you more, you know.
Oh, you can't call nobody.
Brother Jerome,
we're going to take another question, and hopefully my phone will
I'll
hang up. You know, I'm on FBI time. They got to get their tape in. So my phone going to hang up in a minute. So DJ Black Caesar, do we have another question before we move on with our topic?
No, ma'am. You guys can move on.
Okay. All right. Well, Brother Jamil, Brother Rakim, somebody going to step in, and DJ Black Caesar going to get me back on the line as soon as my phone hang up, because they do hang it up in a minute. Oh, my God. What is my note? Oh, my God. I've never done this before. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. The nine ministries. You know, when I was talking to Brother Robert about this earlier, you know, we were trying to think of a way of how we can really create action behind our words, because we have had the Muslim program ever since the beginning of time. But I think, you know, when our people, like you said, Brother Abel, they say they need jobs. You know, our people in particularly are struggling economically. We are at a disadvantage in this country when it comes to our finances, when it comes to how we are not able to come together and pool our resources. And so I wanted to see, from your opinion and Brother Jamil's, you know, to make this not be exclusively an Islamic thing or a mosque thing or a Muslim thing, you know, how society in general has us divided. You know, we're divided by faith, we're divided by skin tone, we're divided by dialect, we're divided by all sorts of things. And how we, the black, the brown, the red, can come together and implement these nine ministries into our communities for the sake of our people as a whole, regardless of what religion that they are. And so I want to ask you, Brother Jamil, first, how can we implement this and make those nine ministries the action committees in the community? Brother Jamil? Can y'all hear me?
No, I can hear you now. I had mute on because my 2-year-old nephew was enthusiastically greeting me upon his arrival in the home, and he was making me know that what we said a moment ago about language is very true, because I don't speak 2-year-old, you know, but I was very glad. I was very glad to see the brother. I was very glad to talk to him, and it was just great. You know, it was great. We slapping high fives and giving daps and everything. It's just great. I mean, 2-year-old boy. But listen, what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said is that the time dictates the agenda. He said to us that there's a teaching that always has to do with time. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us the theology of time. Then he taught us the time and what must be done. So we can get a clue from that the time will dictate what we should do and what action will be taken. Theory has run its course. Theory and postulation has ended.
Now is the time for action of a concerted and organized type. Don't think that just because the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan won't be laying out the specifics of the economic blueprint of the Nation of Islam and the 3-year plan of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad this coming Saturday in Charlotte, Sunday in Charlotte, North Carolina. Don't think that you won't hear a specific plan. The truth of the matter, and it may hurt some of our listeners to hear this, but I have to tell the truth. The truth of the matter is that the solution and the action-oriented solution has already been in the midst of the black community for 82 years. The solution is the program that you see on the inside back cover of the Final Call every single week, the Muslim program, what the Muslims want and what the Muslims believe. That language, the Muslims, has put our people in such a tizzy of fear because they'll tell you, I'm no Muslim. I'm not a Muslim. Mm-mm, not me. But then
and they feel
them,
excluded.
And then you ask them, what is a Muslim? And they'll tell you, yo no sé. I don't know. What is a Muslim? I don't know. Well, how do you know you're not a Muslim? Well, then you start breaking down what a Muslim is. The Muslim, the definitive article V is used. The followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are an example in your midst of a work in progress. You say we're not perfect, we're not finished. No, we're not, but we've started on the road. Where are you on the road? I'm saying that we've got to get busy and act out the program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The 9 ministries must become active. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is a beautiful man. He transmits, he translates, he transforms, he transfigures. He's always moving across from one polar opposite extreme to the other polar opposite extreme. But he's doing that because his mission is to outreach, to bring people to Islam. Can y'all hear me all right?
Yes, sir.
He is involved in a mission of outreach and salvation. So he's taking what is clear and blunt and stated very straight by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and make it, okay, you don't want to follow the FYI and MGT. Okay, all right. We'll give you 9 ministries. But everything that's in those 9 ministries comes from the taproot of the Nation of Islam and is connected to and consistent with and congruent with every other revealed word of truth in the world. Islam, as taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, does not disagree with the Islam of the Prophet of Islam, Muhammad ibn Abdullah, sallallahu alayhi wasallam. The Islam taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad doesn't disagree with the message of Jesus, the Messiah, son of Mary. The Islam of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad doesn't disagree with what Moses brought in the Pentateuch or the books of law for the Jews. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad's teaching is flat out true. And everybody running from the truth is running toward the enemy, devil, and their own death. The 9 ministries will be acted out when people recognize the need for change. Let's take one example, and I'm going to close on this. We have a ministry of arts and culture in one of the 9 ministries. Is that correct, Sister Gidget, Brother Abel?
Yes, sir.
DJ Black Caesar? We have the ministry of arts and culture. Arts and culture can be defined in many different ways, and I'll give you a basic, loose definition. It is the expression of the creative impulse in man. It is the habit and the way among a people that marks them as a distinct people and is often expressed in terms of arts, both the lively arts, music and drama, or the creative or the display of the decorative arts, painting and sculpture. Whatever it may be, arts and culture are universal throughout the entire population of the earth. Why then should we wait around forever for something to be dumped on us and told that it's culture? When do black people wake up? They're going to get awakened a little bit more every day. Every day somebody's scratching their head and saying, wait a minute, Lil Wayne is not my culture. Every day somebody's waking up and scratching their head and saying, wait a minute, I've got to have something different than Daisy Dukes and that's just my baby daddy. And I, you know, at some point people get sick and begin to regurgitate, and they'll call on the God themselves. I leave you by saying that what Minister Farrakhan said on January the 2nd of 2011 is true. He spoke on KISS 98 in New York City. Brother Abel, I know you know what I'm talking about. He was addressing the invitation given to him by a group of people in Newark, New Jersey, who were trying to get the streets back safe again because of violence and crime and gang activity. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was very candid with them. He told them, he said, look, you don't have much time to do that. God is going to wrap up his teaching, his justice and mercy. His mercy don't last forever. He said, because you as a people, I'm talking not black people, the original people, you and I have rejected the major greatest teachers in the history of the world. They came to us. We laughed at them. We selected foolishness. We chose folly. We laughed in the face of Noble Drew Ali. We laughed in the face of Marcus Garvey and W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington. We laughed at Paul Robeson. We mocked the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We derided Dr. Martin Luther King. We laughed at every teacher that taught us anything of value and turned to the nightclub and the disco and the hoe track and the dope den and the crack house. Now we are about to get our just reward because Allah has to whoop us. Is there still time to work? Yes. Should we continue to work through the nine ministries? Yes. Should we continue to do everything within our power to save our people? Indubitably, yes. But know of a fact and a certainty that if we keep rejecting Allah, he got something for that backside. You better believe it.
Woo. Yes, sir, absolutely. And I'm surprised my phone haven't hung up yet. So, Brother Abel, I want to hear from you about the implementation of the nine ministries.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, I totally just want to echo Brother Minister Jamil's sentiment because he hit it right on the head. And it's interesting, the note I'm looking at here from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's speech that he gave on the mall October 16th, 1995, as he was beginning to close down the lecture that he gave on the mall that day. He says, all of these eight steps take place in a process called time, T-I-M-E, time. So time is absolutely what dictates the agenda and is absolutely on God's time that we're all functioning. We may want to see these nine ministries up and running, but these nine ministries require something which we have yet to achieve in order for them to really be actualized, and that is the unity of our people. We had glimpses of it in 2005 going into the Millions More movement, and the things that are impediments to our unity are the same things that will be impediments to the success of these ministries or any other endeavor that we take on. That's why we cannot escape this process of atonement. If we really want to see a ministry of agriculture, we can't have a ministry of agriculture without also a ministry of a finance, which is going to fund such an endeavor. We can't have a ministry of finance without unity. We can't have real unity while we're still in the same mentality that was given to us by the slave master's children. We cannot hope to achieve any of these endeavors. That's why I have to echo Brother Minister Jamil again. The program of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad is the only solution. That does not mean being dogmatic. That does not mean if people are in the church, they have to come to the mosque now. That does not mean that if wherever we find our people, all of us have something to aid and to offer in this unity, in this nation-building process that we're trying to initiate and involve ourselves in, but we can't do any of it without this step of atonement. That's why the final step is perfect union with God. It is once we are at least on that road towards the union with God that we can begin to see one another and the basic need for unity.
But when we're looking at a dead people, a dead nation, and we're looking at that in America, I'm not talking about just black people. You're looking at dead Mexicans, dead white people, dead Irish, dead Italian, because the educational system and the society of America has degenerated to such a point where all of them are now in need of the saving grace and teachings of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. The whole nation, as a matter of fact, is in need of it. And there's a man standing up in the midst of her crying out with a way out of her sin, with a way out of the destruction, with a way out of the want, with a way out of the need. But nobody wants to listen to the man because the media has portrayed him, has presented him as some sort of hater, some sort of racist, some sort of enemy, when in fact he's the best friend that we've ever had, besides God and his Christ himself. And so what my appeal would be, if we wish to have these ministries started, then we have to do more of the groundwork, which we are in the midst of doing with the FOI going out in the streets. We're building, if you will, a certain amount of credit with our people. We're reestablishing our line of credit. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's credit is impeccable, but we not necessarily so as his followers. So we're out there now reestablishing these lines of credit with our people. Because right now they're not willing necessarily to buy in if I go and knock on the door, because they haven't seen me. They don't know me. So if I go in the good man's name, Minister Farrakhan, they know the good man, but there have been a lot of people who come speaking in a good man's name, and that hasn't ended up so good for our people over the years. They trust the good man, but you and I are the ones who have faltered to a degree, and through these steps of atonement, we can regain that unity, regain that line of credit. I'm using a sort of economic term here, but it's I think, a proper analogy to use for it. Because we have to reestablish that we are credit worthy. We have to establish that, yes, you can trust me. Yes, my word is my bond, because I'm striving to follow the man that you know you can trust. And once we have that with our people, we'll be able to bring them a program, and they'll buy into it, not just because of the credit that we've now established, not just because of the rapport and the love that we've proven through service and time and commitment of going out in the streets and meeting them where they're at, but also because we will have, by the time and the circumstances that God is in control of, he will make it where there will be no other option. We can plan, and Allah plans, and Allah is the best of planners. But our best plan is to follow God's man, and to follow him not just in the superficial sense, wearing a bow tie and a suit. This isn't a costume, dogmatic sort of cultish group. This is absolutely, and Brother Jamil, you said it so beautifully, he's sort of deconstructing and reconstructing the Muslim program for us so that we come out of the dogma. He told me directly, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, don't beat the Latino people up with the term black. Why? Because they don't see themselves as black. Well, that isn't changing the teachings. It's being wise enough to understand the mentality of the people and to understand that what is the objective here? Is it for them to think of themselves as black, or for them to know that God has come for them? And then from that, we can grow them into knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. So I don't mean to get excited, but it is a critical question, and the time is becoming narrower and more narrower. And the more narrow the time becomes, the quicker we have to become in trying to be obedient. And if we would strive harder to be obedient, these programs, I don't want to make it sound spooky, but these programs would naturally evolve out of our unity and service for our people. We wouldn't have to try to come up with a construct to implement it.
Teach.
All praises be to Allah. Okay, Brother Abel. Let's go over the nine ministries. Yes, sir. That Brother Jerome. Okay, do we have any questions, Caesar, before we move on? I say move over.
No, ma'am.
Okay. We're going to go over the nine ministries because, personally, I have an announcement to make. You know, the name of our Facebook group is called Nation Building. And brother, I hope Brother Rakim is still on the phone. I know I've said
right
this
here,
a thousand. Yes, sir.
Right,
I'll pray this to Allah. Thank
right
you,
here.
Brother Rakim. Just hold on right there. I know I have said this many times before about the history of my involvement, and particularly with Nation Building. And Brother Rakim so graciously shared his vision and allowed me to do numerous of things since I've been in the group. But the one thing I'm really personally about, I'm really about doing the work. And I just can't continue on, you know, coming on shows and we're talking about it, because we could talk a thing to death to the point that, you know, at the end of the day you have nothing else to really say. You said everything. But what have you done? So I'm going to announce today that Nation Building is going to be just that from this moment forward. We are going to be about building. So tonight will mark the first day of putting the nine ministries into action. We have to be about what we say we believe, you know, and I understand fully that Facebook in particularly is a social, you know, network site, and you're supposed to get on there, you're supposed to laugh, you're supposed to have fun, you're supposed to whatever. However, we have used that social network site to unify believers all across the country. If you look at the membership of Nation Building, we're from coast to coast. We have brothers from Africa. We have brothers all the way from China that are members of Nation Building. And so we have to use this technology. And when you talk about the time, Brother Abel, it's time, because you know, we can't all be in different places at the same time. But as long as we are networking, we can bring some ideas, some groups of people that are in their immediate communities to actually do the work. We have a responsibility. And I tell people this all the time, you know, You can be a Muslim, you can follow the teachers, you can say you're a believer, but believe me, when you stand up under the flag of Islam, under that crescent and moon and star, there is a responsibility that we have to carry out. So Nation Building is going to carry it out. We're not going to talk about it. We're going to be about it. So there are going to be some slight changes, and yes, we want y'all to come in there and have fun, and yes, we're still going to address issues of marriage, relationship, and things of that nature, but it's going to be a working group. It has to be, because we have to live up to our name. Most of us in there, our last names are Muhammad, and as a Muhammad, you don't lay down and sit down. You get up and do your father's business. So I wanted to say that, and I wanted to also, I guess, Brother Abel, is it a good time to announce it now?
Yes, ma'am, you can if you'd like.
Okay, well, Brother Minister Abel has so graciously volunteered to be Nation Building's Minister of Spirituality and Morality. So we want to officially welcome you to Nation Building. Brother Minister Abel, and I just feel like, you know, you're the best person for the job because you are, you have that spirit and you have that connectability, if that's even a word, to really reach the people. And I know personally I am so inspired by you when I hear you on Sunday. And just as I am with Brother Jamil, you know, just the quality and the knowledge that you all bring. And, you know, some of us like me, you know, I've been in the nation like 46 years, but, you know, I've been, you know, been doing my thing here and doing my thing there. But, you know, for you all to come in and just really be as committed as you are to really reaching our people is admirable, and I just really appreciate you coming on board. So I know Brother Rakeem would like to welcome you too. So go ahead, Brother Rakeem, and say what you will.
You know, Sister Gidget, I sit up here, I almost got tears in my eyes because when I first founded Nation Building, I never imagined that it would reach the capacity that it has reached. I mean, Sister Marilyn and myself, she's my co-founder. We've always had a vision for nation building, but I'm almost speechless. I mean, Sister Gidget, I'm glad I brought you aboard. I couldn't thank a lot enough for you. Brother Abel, I've been trying to reach out to you, and Allah does everything in due time. I've been trying to reach out. I left messages on Brother Abel's page. I said, Brother, you're in nation building.
You have reached mailbox number 832-7903-06. Please leave your message after the tone.
Wow, some recording. But, you know, he deals with so much. I don't think he even realized he was in nation building, but I'm glad that, you know, when it was brought to his attention, he took heed to the call and became the minister of spirituality and morality. Brother, this is a blessing, and I do welcome you aboard, brother, and I thank Allah for you, brother. And with your help, with Allah's guidance, we going to conquer the world, baby. We're going to conquer the world.
That's right.
Yes, sir. Somebody trying to call somebody?
Hey, Rakeem, just go ahead and talk, man. I'm trying to get Sister Gidget back on the phone.
Yes, sir. Yes, but like I say, brother, we gonna conquer the world, brother. We gonna bring in the kingdom of Almighty God, Allah. We gonna bring it in, and I thank Allah for allowing us to network on Facebook, because without Facebook, this would not be possible. Not at all.
I'm back.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, Brother Rakir, I missed what you said. I'm sorry.
Well,
I'm surprised my phone stayed on as long as it did.
Yeah, I was just welcoming Brother Abel. Without Facebook, this would not be possible. Without you, Sister Gidget, this would not be possible. Without the help of Sister Marilyn, this would not be possible. Without Brother Jamil, and Brother Jamil, I always said that nation building is a movement. We say nation building is a Facebook page, but the nation building movement is in the real world. We're operating in real time. In the streets, we're dealing with our people. We're trying to raise the black and Latino communities. We're trying to raise the Muslim and the Christians to the level that we're supposed to be as human beings in a human family in the name of Allah. I mean, I could thank Allah enough for nation building, all the members of nation building. Those who are inactive, you will come. You will come. I mean, you can't help but to come when you see the wonderful works Allah going to do through us.
Yes, sir. And you know, I really think that we have to be a model. You know, when Minister Farrakhan was on and on Ask Farrakhan, you know, he said that we have to have something to offer our people. You know, we can't say stop selling drugs if we don't have any job for you to do or have any economic resources for you. And I just think that it's our responsibility to be a model for other whether it's Facebook groups, whether it's moms, whether it's communities, blocks, families, whatever. I think that we have the responsibility to be a model to show people that this is possible, that unity works, and that division gets us nowhere. And we can show that love during the process of atonement. We can atone, we can come back and do the work, because I remember being on the mall that day, and so many of us came back to our cities, and we went to work all because of the call from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So that's what we have to be about. That is the entity that we got away from, and that's what we're going to have to implement now, and we can't talk about it anymore. People, the work has to be done. So I'm going to check with Brother Caesar again right now. Do we have any questions?
No, ma'am.
Okay. All right, we're going to move on. We're going to move on to these nine ministries, and I'm going to let Brother Jamil talk about some, and I'm going to let Brother Abel talk about some, and then Caesar, don't let 9:45 pass me by, because we're going to retake the pledge. So all of you brothers out there, and I'm going to have Brother DJ Black Caesar do a sound check. I don't know how it's going to sound, Caesar. If we're going to have to see if it's going to sound, you know, audible, if we have all the lines open, and if not, just please take the pledge where you are, but we're going to listen to Minister Farrakhan as he spoke almost 17 years ago on the mall. We're going to play the pledge, and we're going to re-vow to our communities, to our families, and to ourselves, and of course to Allah, to go back out here and do the work. So we're going to talk about the nine ministries, because a lot of us know what they are, and a lot of us, they really don't. So with you, we're going to start with you, Brother Abel. Spirituality and morality as a ministry, what is that about? Brother
Abel? Can you hear me? Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We hear you now. Yes, sir.
Okay, there really is one example that God has already given to us in the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan that is present amongst us, that is the embodiment of that ministry. He is the head of that ministry. He's the head of all of the ministries, and he's the guide for all of the ministries. So it's a pretty easy function in the sense that the person who serves under that ministry, if you will, or ministerial titles or label or function, really all we have to do is keep looking for the guide and the guidance coming from the guide. It's not an issue of us having to make up anything. As Brother Jamil mentioned, the Muslim program is already before us. The modern day implementation and teaching of it is present amongst us. All we're helping to do is be studious and mindful that whatever other endeavors we take in any of these ministries and any other aspect of our life are in line with that guidance. And especially if we're forming this specifically with the believers at first, it means that we have to, A, keep as that standard the steps of atonement, because what we're ultimately trying to achieve is oneness with God. And the way to that is the steps of atonement. So with that as the head, with that as the standard, and we have a man who's the embodiment of the standard in front of us, where we don't have to try to come up with our own thinking and rely on our own understanding. We have a man that we can refer things to if he hasn't already answered many of the questions we may have in our mind.
Yes, sir.
So it is just a matter of us being mindful of that. And when I say mindful, I mean keeping our eye on the prize and focused on the fact that we don't need a bunch of guys or self-made leaders. We already have a God-given leader. And we may not necessarily, if we're going into the Christian church, obviously they don't necessarily believe what we believe. If we're talking with brothers and sisters from other communities, we can't force them necessarily or impose on them our belief. We want to argue in the best manner, but if we can avoid argument altogether, let's do that too. When we take a close look to see how significant spiritual guidance is, when you look at, for example, the Muslim program, it has what appears to be a religious connotation by using the term Muslim as a key word, the adjective really, in the program. But when you look at the Muslim wants and the Muslim beliefs, it starts with the 10 Muslim wants. You have to go all the way down to point number 5, halfway through the Muslim wants, before you even see the word Islam appear.
Yes, sir.
Before he's just speaking in general terms about our people. And then even after he says, we want freedom for all believers of Islam now held in federal prisons, the very next line says, we want freedom for all black men and women now under the death sentence in innumerable prisons in the North as well as the South. So right there, it's bigger than a so-called religious organization or a spiritual calling or a system of faith and belief. We're talking about the program that will address the needs of all of our people. And when we say all, we're speaking of all of the original people and really all who would be willing to come under such a program. And in these desperate times, we may be greatly surprised at how many are looking for another option. That's why it's so vital to have the spiritual as the head, not spiritual in some silly sense. We're not talking about lighting candles and going into a corner. And that's not to make mockery of that, but that's not necessarily spiritual. We're talking about that spirit which comes and it is not ordained or conferred on us by some license or by men. We're talking about the anointing of God. And for sure, we have an anointed one that 20 years ago, God and his people acknowledged and brought him to the forefront of leadership. And I'm speaking of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So I think we have to be clear that that's the spiritual leadership by which we want to sort of tag or tie everything through so that all of our other steps are in line with that which God has already given to us through his leadership.
And I want to ask you, Brother Abel, because I've often wondered, when we extend our hand across the aisle, so to speak, you know, slavery has divided us and has given us a warped sense of thinking. And so when we talk about the original man and woman, we are not necessarily talking about the original man and woman that came from Africa and that are so black that they're blue. How are we letting I always refer to them as our Spanish-speaking brothers and sisters and our indigenous people know, and even our yellow people know, that they are part of the original family. How are we really getting that message across? Because we have some that will come. We have some that will, you know, accept the teachings because they know it's true and good for our people. And then we have those that may feel, you know, that it's not for them because most of us in the Nation of Islam are the darker skin version of the original people.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, use the language of the lessons, original. Nobody's going to reject being called original. Yeah, there are different parts to that original family, to the original nation, different shades, different cultures, different language or dialects even. But all of us and nobody will reject being from God. Nobody's going to reject being an original man, an original woman. We can later, even, I mean, these are a lot of sort of semantics that we can become confusing as we start translating into their languages. Just a simple example would be the term black. When you start translating that into Spanish, into Portuguese, the way that it's used in different regions, even within the same countries in Latin America, within the same areas in the Caribbean, gives a whole different shade of coloring to the meanings of the word. So we have to be very exact. That's why it's still ultimately beyond the words that we use, our action. When our people, black, brown, red, yellow, any human being sees people upright, respectable, respecting themselves, cleaning themselves up, not begging anyone for anything, but just getting up and doing something for themselves, that is attractive to people. Because it's what every people wants for their own selves. They want to be free. They want to be respected. They want to be dignified and civilized. So when they see an example of that, they'll naturally gravitate to it. And, of course, we've been broken down through slavery and Willie Lynch and the conquest and all of these things that have happened to us. But now with the presence of God and the truth that he's given to us through the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, it is, as you said, now an issue of implementing those things. Not necessarily even yet, although we should begin in systematic ways to start developing institutions and businesses and educational systems that pattern and are grown out of that culture and that teaching and that knowledge which God has given to us. That's what will attract people. We cannot escape. There's not any sort of special teaching or any sort of special attention that needs to be drawn to these other cultures. The rising of the black man, the life that will permeate from that, will naturally draw people to us. We just have to have a thorough understanding and have a little knowledge of the civilization and cultures of the human family of the planet Earth, and we'll be able to relate with them, and they'll appreciate us relating with them, because in us they'll see an example of what they want to be.
All praises due to Allah. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely. So is Brother Jamil with us, Caesar?
No. I just tried to call him back, but I guess he's going to call in.
Okay. Oh, yeah, and I think he may have had to go early because he's driving to Charlotte. And so let's talk about information right quick, Brother Abel. Ministry of Information. And
that's...
How do we really go about that?
See, that's very critical, because those are the lines of communication used to disseminate information. And then if you notice in war, one of the first things that the enemy will try to do is cut off information. Because
right.
If there's not a way for communication to occur, then there's disorder and disorganization, and that can be catastrophic in its effects. So we should never take lightly how vital something as simple as information is. We all have done the test in school where the teacher would whisper something to one person and then they'd whisper it to the next person, and by the time they got to the back of the class, it was nothing like what the message was when it began at the front of the class. Well, that shows us the real power the inability to communicate and pass on information properly can be very, very vital to a nation. Without that, really, the nation is crippled. So the Ministry of Information is not something that can be designed, I don't believe, outside of the construct that we currently are functioning under within the framework of our mosques and our study groups. So we have to understand the purpose of these things and each of these ministries as it applies to our nation. And then there are devices by which we would then give information to our friends in the Christian church, our allies in the Jewish synagogues, our friends in the nationalist community. We would have to develop all of those arms, but first, internally, those arms should be developed properly. And if you notice what Brother National Secretary Burby is doing, they are being developed in a way that we've never had before, so that we can be right up to the modern times in our way of being able to verify and send and receive information.
Yes, sir, absolutely. Okay, and we're going to move quickly. Education.
Well, education, of course, the minister, every year now, I believe for the last 5 years now, we've had an educational conference. the Honorable Elijah Muhammad put the great value on the Muhammad University of Islam, because it is in the teaching of our youth that they may learn at the earliest ages the knowledge of God and the knowledge of self, that it will perpetuate for us our nation going into the future, and it really is the process even of perfecting. That's real nation building right there. When our young people, which is the future of the nation, when they get the idea as babies, when they start to develop and are nurtured in their own, by their own, in their school, then what will grow from them is the nation of Islam, is the nation of righteousness, is the nation of peace.
Yes, sir. Okay, health and human services.
And again, these are services for our people. Any nation, I'm paraphrasing the minister, and you've heard people talk about this in the past, any nation that does not care for its sick, its elderly, and its citizens, really, what good is it then? That is what the nation and governments are established for, is to look after the well-being of its citizenry. Otherwise, what's the point of the nation? And I'm saying that in a governmental sense now. So it's very, very vital, because without that, we don't know the quality of health, the well-being of its citizens, which means then that we really don't have a good standard or hold or handle on where our nation is if we don't know those type of logistical things. Not to mention that it is of primary importance is to be able to care, as I mentioned earlier, for those who are members or citizens of your nation. Without that, there's really no point to having a government or a nation above us or under us in the real sense to serve the needs of our people. And health and well-being is life itself. So that is a primary need that a nation has to service.
Yes, sir. And science and technology?
Science and technology. Again, this is where now the nation is able to establish and measure and grow, because it is science and technology that pushes our limits, and it affects all of the other ministries. It affects how we can do information. It affects how well the elders and the youth and the sick can be cared for, because we're constantly developing, experimenting. So science and technology is a critical, critical aspect of a nation, because it measures really the intelligence through the scientific experimentation, as well as the growth of the nation through the experimentation and then implementation of things learned and established for the betterment, the wellness of all of those who are citizens of the nation. So it's very critical. All of them are critical.
Oh, yes, sir. And then, you know, when we talk about agriculture, you know, with everything that is going on with food nowadays, and, you know, we don't even have any real food in the grocery stores anymore. Give us a little information on agriculture, because that is critical, because what we eat drives our health. It also drives our mental health. So speak on that a little bit.
And even more critical than just, of course, of course that's vital, because that's life, the wellness and the vitamins and the nourishment we receive from it. But land is the basis for independence. So if we're not farming, there's a great leader from Mexico during the revolution in 1910 from the southern part of Mexico named Emiliano Zapata, who said that the earth belongs to those that work it. Those who work the soil, that's who it belongs to. So when we're talking about farming, we're talking about the basis for independence, because everything comes from that agriculture. From that we can grow trees to build houses. From that we can grow food to feed our families that are now inhabiting these houses. From the earth we can mine it and get minerals and wealth from it. Everything we need is in that land, but we have to know the science of how to do that, or what is called or referred to as agriculture and farming. And it's something that we, of course, as you've noticed, the minister has been pointing out to us, we no longer want to be involved with that because of the stigma from racism, from slavery, but we definitely must put our hands back in the soil, because that's where we have to go to establish our nation, our independence, and the very life source for our people.
Yes, and I remember him saying that a farmer loves the earth, and
that's right.
We have to treat it with love. you know, and not abuse it, because we've seen through our history how our land has been abused and how now they're using alternative resources to even feed the nation because our land has been so destroyed by everything that has been done to it. So that is critical. And defense, well, we are
talking about
defense, but...
Yeah. Yeah, we know what, once we have our own, we're going to have enemies. We already have enemies, but right now we don't have necessarily a territory of our own, so we're going to need defense. We're going to need that which preserves that which God has given to us. It's the nature of all things. Everything in nature has a natural defense mechanism, a natural instinct to preserve and defend itself. We being God's kingdom will be no different in God's nation, Jesus.
And, you know, I wanted to take it a step further because, you know, like Minister Roberts said, you know, politics is local, but then so is defense. Because when we look at the rate of how our young men in particularly are dying, we're talking about defending our communities, defending the blocks that we live on so sisters can walk down the street, so our babies can walk down the street without getting shot, you know, so they can go to school without, you know, being, you know, beaten and killed and, you know, That's also defense, because we have to clean up our communities as well. And we have to sometimes, oftentimes, we need to police our own communities to make sure that we are not creating an atmosphere that will allow law enforcement who is not always a friend of the community, who is not going to come out there and negotiate with our children and our young people and our people in general. They come in to destroy, to kill you, to arrest you, to imprison you or whatever, and we have to create an atmosphere where we're saying that, hey, not in this neighborhood, not on this block, and it needs to be done nationwide, so that some of the things that's going on in our community, especially us killing each other, can cease. I think that's vital. And that's part of defense as well, at least in my opinion, it is. So I just want to put that out there. And let's go to trade and commerce right quick.
Well, yes, ma'am. Once we have our own, once we're producing for ourselves, there's already been friendships made through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan all over the planet for us and through the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So it would just be a matter now that we have land from which we can produce our own whatever we decide to produce. Once we have our material, once we have our items, our production, now we are in the have to get into that field where we're trading as an independent nation, as our own people, with other peoples, whether it be cultural exchanges, economic exchanges, political and defense exchanges. All of these, on all of these levels, we will be able to do trade and commerce with the other independent nations of the earth.
Oh, excuse me. Yes, sir. Okay. And arts and culture, we already know what that is. We have so many gifted and talented people. We want to have them to be, allow them to express themselves, but in a positive way. So when we talk about arts and culture, my brother Jamil said it so perfectly, you know, Lil Wayne is not necessarily our culture. It's something that we have been taught. It's a learned behavior. But those things that come from us naturally and beautifully in the spirit of Allah is really what our culture is, because our culture is developed from our nature. And Allah gives many talents to various people, and everything that Allah gives us is good and righteous. So we're going to have to get away out of what we've learned and get back to what God has given us.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, excuse me. Now, Caesar, you let me pass the time.
Oh, wow, I'm sorry. I didn't notice it.
Excuse me. Okay. All right, so can we do a sound check right quick? Do we have any callers on the line still?
Yeah, you got a lot of callers. You want me to cue her? I mean,
Yeah, I want to open up the mic and see how we sound. I'm going to do a test run before we do the pledge. Excuse me, to see how we sound. I don't want it to sound too terrible. And if I can stop coughing, that would help. So are they all open now?
Okay.
Y'all ready? We just gonna do a check run. I'm gonna say it one time. Say your name.
Oh, Muhammad.
I can't hear everybody. How many people we got on the line? We got more people than that.
Brother Cortez.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Cortez. How are you?
I'm good. Wa alaikum salam.
Right. Well, thank you for joining us tonight. It's the first time I heard your voice. And so thank you for being on the line tonight. And I want to give a shout-out to my brothers in St. Louis, Missouri. Thank you so much for your support, Brother Gene X and your crew. Love you all much. Okay, I don't know if that's going to work, but we're going to try it anyway, Caesar. We're going to hear now from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And he spoke 17 years ago in Washington, D.C., the pledge of the Million Man March. Let's do it, Caesar.
Take this pledge with me. Say with me, please. I. Say your name. Pledge that from this day forward, I will strive to love my brother as I love myself. I. Say your name. From this day forward, will strive to
people. And, you know, that brings back so many memories. Because if anybody who went to the Million Man March was on the mall that day and heard Minister Farrakhan say that up close and personal, you will never forget it as long as you live. That was the most, one of the most beautiful moments of my life, to see that beautiful sea of black men from everywhere. I met brothers from the Panama Canal. I got brothers I'm still friends with, Coach I, who's from Panama, Brother Amos, Brother Melvin. We're still good friends, and all because of the Million Man March. Okay, Brother Abel.
Yes, ma'am.
You want to close us out with any last words of wisdom?
Well, I just want to thank you, dear sister, and Brother Rakim, and Brother Jamil, who was on the line, and, of course, our brother DJ, who was with us, and who I'm so thankful to just have been here with you all. And I don't know if our sister, who was the attorney, Sister Geneva, I believe was her name, if she was still with us. It just was an honor to be with you all this evening, and I pray that something that was shared was of benefit and will help in the cause of freedom, justice, equality, and the liberation of our people. And I'm so, so anxious to hopefully see many who are listening in Charlotte this weekend. I pray for those who are traveling to have a safe trip there and back. And I ask that Almighty God, Allah, give us the spirit, strength, and wisdom to do what is needed in this time, that we may be found acceptable to Him. And I thank you again, just for the honor and the opportunity to speak to your listeners.
Well, Brother Abel, you know, I really, we are the ones that are thankful, you know, that you actually took the time out to come and, you know, and join on with us, being our minister of spirituality and morality. So, brother, we thank you. We appreciate you. We love you. You know, you keep us motivated. You have a great work ahead of you, but you do a great work, and you are so, so very much appreciated. And I want to give Brother Rakim, if he's still on the line, opportunity to say anything if he wanted before we go. Brother Rakim, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. I'm still here. I'd like to say thank you, Brother Abel, for such a fire. I put this on Facebook. It is full of fuel, full of fire, brother. I'm really proud, brother. I'm proud for you to be part of Nation Building. I'm proud of Sister Gidget for encouraging you to come on to the show. I don't know what she did. It was like magic. The whole thing was just magic.
All I did was send him a message. He's just a willing and loving brother. That's all. I didn't do anything.
Oh, okay, she didn't twist your arm. That's a good thing. Good thing.
Nice, <sir. laughs>
But, brother, I appreciate it. Tonight was beautiful. I also appreciate Brother Jamil, if you're still listening. It was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful show. And I appreciate all the guests that have listened, not the guests, the audience that listened tonight. We here at Nation Building, we really appreciate you. And I hope that every one of us would take that pledge seriously, back to our homes, our communities, our families, and share with each and everybody that has a listening ear. Share that pledge. It will help us. For the good, for the well-being of the whole human family, this pledge will help us. Mr. Farrakhan is the man of the hour. Keep your eyes on the prize. We're on a move. We are a nation. We're building a nation. The name of the group is the Nation Building Movement. The name of the radio show is Nation Building. We're going to continue moving forward. We're going to bring the kingdom of Almighty God right here on earth as it is in heaven.
Yes, sir.
Amen.
Absolutely. And thank you, brothers, who have recommitted yourselves tonight. So please go back into your homes. Go back into your communities. Follow those steps of atonement that Brother Abel so beautifully laid out for us. And if you didn't get them all, you can, in about an hour or so, you'll be able to replay this show and listen to them again. Please implement those, and let's move forward in the name of Allah, in the spirit of the Million Man March, and let's keep it up. And that's why I have Brother Abel on with us, because Brother Abel, sometimes we forget. And so, you know, I'm dependent on you to work with me to keep us mindful that we always have to be in that process of atonement. We always have to be in that mindset of doing the work. But without spirituality and without morality, when we don't get our hearts and our minds right first, nothing we're going to do is going to prosper. So we have to be right with each other. We have to be right with Allah first in order for Allah to make us successful. So with that being said, I'm going to say assalamu alaikum. I want to thank Brother DJ Black Caesar. Yes.
Hold on for a second. You got two people want to say something.
Sure.
770, your mic is open, and 843, your mic is open. So I guess you guys take turns. 770, you have a comment? You want to speak?
No, sir. This is Brother Jahal, so I was just taking my pledge, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, Brother Jahal. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
843, you can go ahead and speak now. 843. That's Mr. Maryland on the phone.
Yes, sir. Could you hear me now?
Yeah,
yes, ma'am. Assalamualaikum.
Walaikum salam. How's everybody?
Everybody is fine. Brother Abel, this is Sister Marilyn. She's the co-founder of Nation Building, and she's our graphic artist. That's our mama.
Okay. Assalamualaikum. How are you, Minister Abel?
Walaikum salam. I'm fine, dear sister. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yeah, first I wanted to thank everyone. You have to excuse me. I'm a little under the weather tonight. I'm not feeling good, but I just wanted to, you know, make sure that I reach out to everyone tonight. But I wanted to welcome you, Minister Abel, to Nation Building. And thank you. Thank you so much for tonight. And also I wanted to thank Sister Gidget, Brother Rakeem, Brother Rasul, and Brother Jamil, and Brother Caesar Black for everything what they have done for Nation Building. And I also wanted to thank all the believers, because without the support and love from the believers, we wouldn't be here today. So I just wanted to, you know, tell everybody I love them, you know, much respect to everybody, and assalamu alaikum.
And we love you, Mama Marilyn.
Yes, ma'am.
Get feel better.
Yes, ma'am. Thank
That's
you.
A good name, Mama Marilyn.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, join us next week and every day so far. We, you know, I'm going to give the schedule right quick. On Tuesday nights, we have Out on the Front Line with Brother Jahad Muhammad out of Atlanta, Georgia, and he has a Boots on the Ground report from FOI all over the country. On Wednesday night, we have DJ Black Caesar and Vienna with new artists and professional artist, and he has authors, and he has all kinds of people on the show. I've met so many wonderful, interesting people on DJ Black Caesar's show on Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock Central Time. On Thursday night, come back with us with Nation Building Presents. And on Sunday, Brother Vernon Muhammad, who couldn't be here tonight because he had a previous engagement, will be back to teach us about how to make some money. So please continue to join us. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your support. I leave you as I came before you. One nation, one love. Assalamu alaikum.
Hey, what can I do for you this fine day?
DJ Black Caesar says, stay tuned for the best hip-hop and R&B music. Rent, do, pay me.